God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." Because we believe we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I had an opportunity yesterday to sit and talk with a friend of mine who's been through something that I cannot imagine. And I did not know I still had the ability to be shocked. I've told you a little bit about this trial that's been going on. It went on for a little over 2 weeks, related to the death of Grace Shara. And Grace was 19 years old when her family made the mistake of taking her to a hospital in Wisconsin. And what transpired there is something I'm going to make available to you on Friday, all of it. All I can fit on the radio show. Scott and I talked for over an hour. This is not something we can put on YouTube, so I can't put it there. It's on our audio podcasts, and I'm going to air this, as much of it as I possibly can, on this radio program on Friday. If you want to see the whole thing, the best way to do that is at my Substack site. For premium members, that's the toddhermanshow.substack.com. But again, this radio show is vital, and it's an honor. So I'm going to air as much as I possibly can on Friday. They did not win in this case, well, at least not in court. Scott believes they've won in terms of what he's been tasked to do post what happened to Grace. I believe Grace was medically murdered, and I will stand by that belief. I disagree with the jury. Scott Shara, this is some clips from this interview that I did Monday. Scott Shara told me the odds of even getting the opportunity to sue a medical company in the medical industrial complex.
What I know about the statistics in Wisconsin, you have a 0.003% chance of getting to jury trial. And then once you get to, so that's a small subset.
Yeah.
So there's 27,000 medical malpractice incidences that are documented in Wisconsin annually. 84 have the chance to go to trial, which is the 0.003%. And then the chance of winning once you get to trial is only 3% of that. So it's extremely rare to get to trial. It's even rarer to win. And, you know, that's okay. I mean, we were called to do this trial. God called us into it.
Scott was his daughter's power of attorney. She was 19 with Down syndrome. And according to the court documents, and I mean, this is evidence. This isn't conjecture. There's only one thing to which Scott consented: steroids and bed rest and fluids. That's it. That's all he consented to. He didn't consent to ventilators or a cocktail of drugs, which in my judgment ultimately killed Grace, given in amounts that everybody would have known would have killed her. He never agreed to that. The hospital came back later and said, oh, Grace gave verbal sign-off to this. Grace, 19, with Down syndrome, and two people there with power of attorney. I don't think she verbally agreed to this. And if she did, she didn't know what she was verbally agreeing to. So Scott Shara, who's a man of faith, follows Jesus, proclaims him as Lord and Savior, explained why he isn't distraught by the ruling of the court.
That would have been a less evil victory. So I'm in, you know, the paradigm of evil versus less evil is played out in Revelation 13. God explains Satan's dualistic nature. He's got an evil nature and a less evil nature. So if we would have won, people would have been cheering and, oh gosh, you know, they would have thought the system was good. Well, no, it would have been a victory in spite of the system. I'm not seeing it from the point of view that I'm distraught because we lost. No, I mean, it would have been, it's a miracle regardless of winning or losing that we got this far in the Antichrist legal system. And it's out there for the public to review now at any time.
In fact, the trial was live streamed. Grace Shara, S-C-H-A-R-A. You can go to ouramazinggrace.net, I believe, where that would be housed. So one of the things that the judges did, the judge, to aid the jury, I think, in making the, quote, right decision, was the judge ruled, as Scott explained, that because Grace stayed in the hospital, they agreed to everything. Now, just follow this. That because Scott didn't immediately seize his daughter and move her from the hospital, and they would have fought that. I mean, they physically removed Scott from the hospital for asking questions. Because he didn't physically remove his daughter, he was then tacitly agreeing to everything they wanted to do, including this three-drug cocktail, which is, to me, as evident as this microphone in front of my mouth is, as the thing that killed Grace. So Scott Shara talked about the common drugs ICU argument used in court and how it's one of the common blinders some medical workers use.
Once they're in the ICU, they use this as the excuse in the trial. The defense said, well, these are common drugs in the ICU. She's in the ICU, and that's how they monitor the patient. So they're there monitoring. And, well, they monitor based on their blinders. They don't monitor. They don't realize that if somebody has side effects, they should be taken off that drug. Our attorneys brought up, they just posed this question to one of the defense experts, and the defense expert had to agree with us. And the question was, if your son or daughter had a side effect, a reaction to aspirin, so they have a first reaction to aspirin, would you give them a second one? So then now, let's say that you did, and now they had a second reaction to the same aspirin. Would you do it a third time? And that's what happened to Grace. I mean, she had two reactions. The first one wasn't life-threatening on October 7th. The second one on October 8th was actually life-threatening. They saved her life with resuscitation drugs, but then they did it a third time on October 13th, all because this is normal in the ICU. You know, the blinders, it's hard to grasp, Todd, the blinders that these people have on. And anybody that paid attention to the trial saw all this.
So the first drug, as I recall, was Presidex. And they got to, now think of this. A judge graciously allowed them to enter into the court record the product insert for Presidex. And what Scott explained, and you can see this entire interview and hear most of it on Friday on this program. And if you're in the medical world, I would love to hear your feedback after this airs on AFR on Friday or at any of my sites. So they got to have the drug insert included into the evidence that lists some of the known side effects. Grace suffered all of them. But they kept giving more to her. Ultimately, as I recall, giving her 40% more, the highest possible level. And then it was lorazepam, I think it is called, and morphine. And they gave her morphine while Grace had no blood pressure. So in our interview with Scott Shara, he explained how Grace went through a pattern of agitation followed by forced sedation.
Well, they had, in line with that cannula, they hooked up a high flow device, so they made it go faster up Grace's nose. Well, they turned that high flow device up to, and even the nurse said it was going up Grace's nose at 40 miles an hour. So that agitated her. So, you know, instead of just saying, oh yeah, that's agitating her, let's get her back on a regular cannula, because she wasn't agitated at all, they gave her Presidex. Okay. So she was legitimately agitated then. There was another time she was legitimately agitated. Well, although we weren't there, this was after I was taken out by an armed guard. Our daughter Jessica was in the room, and when she was made to go home to take a shower. That's another strange situation in this case, because they told her that you can't take a shower in the room because you're going to aerosol the virus. I mean, what a crazy thought process. But Jessica went home to take a shower. While she's at home for that hour and a half, they strap Grace down to the bed because she wanted to get out of the bed and poop. And so, of course, now she's agitated because they strapped her down. And then the third time she was agitated is when they inserted a feeding tube. So, I mean, these are all times that any of us would have been agitated, right?
And so the response is more and more and more drugs. It's called polydrugging. And anybody, again, anybody with decent medical training would know that this combination of drugs at that level are going to have side effects. And I would contend they would know it would end lives. The jury heard these facts. And I remind you, if you just tuned in, Scott only agreed to bed rest, steroids, and fluids, as I recall. He didn't agree to any of this other stuff. In fact, he was asking questions about it. That's why he was removed by an armed guard. So Scott then explained why this pattern, this agitation and sedation pattern exists from a medical worker's perspective.
So I look at it through the lens, you're in the hospital, you're bought by the medical industrial establishment, you're a nurse, and I've seen this, I mean, I've seen it in some of the nurses' training, even their coffee mugs and things will have versions of this on that, you know, a sedated patient is a good patient. You know, that's the view of the world that they have because it makes their job easier.
So there are good nurses and good doctors who listen to that and their heart hurts and they feel offended. And I want you to know you exist. I know. You know, we've had to, at one point, many, many years ago, our daughter had a pharmaceutical-induced bit of trauma. And my wife is an utter hero for getting our daughter off those psychotropics. Utter hero. One day, I do hope she'll write a book or do a video series on how she did that. Because God love her. It's just miraculous. But early on, our daughter had an effect. It got very serious. Something very scary happened. And we ended up having to go to a public hospital. And I was not a big fan of that. But the people we encountered there, great. Psychiatric nurse, great social worker. I turned out to be a retired combat marine. Great, great guy. Later, I was gifted to work with his son in youth camp. I didn't realize that until we made that connection. So I know you're there. And you need to change your world, the medical world, because it's so very serious. That entire interview, or as much of it we can possibly fit on this program, will air on Friday. I invite you to make plans to listen to that on Disciples View. This is continuing. This is former British MP Andrew Bridgen talking about the bribes he got to keep quiet about the COVID shots.
I know that the vaccines are killing and maiming people. How do I know? If it wasn't for the scientific evidence I've seen, which is mountains, and there's nothing ever contradicts it. It's not like there's a pile here and then there's a smaller pile here. There is nothing here. There's just a great big pile here. And let's not forget, Liz, that, you know, 3 years ago, they tried to bribe me to shut up with anything I wanted. And then 3 years ago, they threatened me and told me that they're not going to let it come out for 20 years.
When a retired or former member of parliament speaks about this, and he spoke in more detail about the bribes and what they offered him and things they told him, that he's up against some of the world's most powerful forces. Can we take a moment and just praise God right now? We've been given the freedom to speak about this on this network, 181 FM stations, because Brother Don Wildman had a vision and then God gave him a plan. Because you fund us, because your monthly donations make it possible for us to speak this way on the radio. I think that we have a cloak of protection over us because we serve one audience, that's God, through many family members, that's all of us. Thank you that we have the opportunity to continue to bring focus on this. And again, because Scott Shara has asked us to do this, please also pray for the doctors and nurses who, in my judgment, took Grace's life. And Scott means that. He really does want their souls saved. We'll come back on A Disciple's View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We will get to some email responses to this later in the day, or later this week, in regard to the circumstances we just talked about with Scott Shara. And I hope you make plans to tune in for that on Friday. I'll get as much of that interview on as possible. I just want to get to this one very, very quickly. This came in at thetoddhermanshow.com from Tina in Spokane, Washington. Hey, that's up the street, listening on the AFR app. Dear Todd, I first learned about you when you filled in for Rush Limbaugh. When I found out you were doing it in Spokane, my mind was blown. When I found out you were using a studio just down the street from our home, my mind was further blown. Since then, I've subscribed to your podcast and listened to you on the AFR app. You could call me a fan, though I know you don't like that word. I'm also a nurse. Please choose your words carefully. Murder means something. I don't believe these people murdered that young woman. I believe that they did the only thing they were allowed to do under the COVID protocols. Is that murder, Todd? It seems like a mistake. It seems like an institutional problem. But please don't bear false witness. Maybe I'm saying this because I'm a nurse and my heart is hurt. I do think what was done to her is wrong. I think the hospital should pay. But murder seems a very, very strong word. Love your program. Thank you for what you do. God bless you and your family. Tina in Spokane, Washington. Tina, thanks for the note. I appreciate that. I would just say this. When Grace Shara went into the hospital, her respiration level was fine. And as you know, it's very, very common when people are sick for their oxygen saturation levels to go down. It's not an uncommon thing. And when they immediately put her on a path towards being intubated, and this is immediately they wanted pre-authorization for a ventilator. Immediately. They were putting on a pathway down a pipeline. And I would just say this, Tina, in regard to murder, that is a very tough word. It means something. But what would you call giving a young woman who had no blood pressure morphine? She was unconscious, non-responsive, not in pain at all. What would you call giving her morphine? The third of two of the last of three drugs they'd given her. How could you see that otherwise? You do, apparently. And maybe it's just because I went through the entire interview with Scott. So listen, Tina, I hope you'll listen to this on Friday, or since you're a member of the podcast, I hope you heard the whole whole interview. Thanks for the note. Appreciate you very, very much. And it's okay to say fan, but let's remember, my job is no more important than anyone else's. So I'm a fan of your work too. Fair enough. I'm having a fruitful conversation with a family member on the topic of the affirmation of same-sex unions by Christian churches. You may know that I challenged myself to read the most persuasive arguments I can in favor of churches sponsoring or affirming same-sex marriage. I don't anticipate having my mind changed. I've been very, very open with this with my family member with whom I'm having this discussion. I don't think that's going to happen because the Bible doesn't change. And the Word of God is unchangeable and unchanging. And unless I see a scriptural change or something that shows unequivocally that scripture was wrong, has been changed to a point that is unrecognizable, I'm not going to back off this position because it's not my position, it's God's. And so much of this is coming down to a pretty interesting technique. I'm reading a book called Torn, and it is very heartfelt, very passionate, from a perspective of a person who changed their mind on this and became someone who thinks churches should affirm. But the first argument that someone tagged for me in this book was, I was born this way. That's the first argument. So let's just replace the sin of adultery or fornication, in this case, same-sex activity, with I was born with a tendency to steal, or to covet, or to lie. See, I'm only about three chapters into the book, and for me, it's fallen apart at that point. When the author's building this base to get to a scriptural argument, and the enabling statute, as it were, legal term, but the enabling statute the platform of the argument is, I was born this way. God does not make mistakes. Therefore, I must be affirmed in the activities that follow these emotions. Falls apart for me. Because you can slot in any other sin and it's not accepted by society. I was born with a need to steal. So therefore, I should be affirmed because God doesn't make mistakes. I like to steal. Well, you're harming others. Okay, I was born to covet. I was born with a jealous heart. I was born with lustful thoughts. I was born to cheat. I just won't tell my husband. I'll just cheat secretly. That way he's not harmed. I'll just be super careful. Then he's not harmed. So it falls apart at that point. Then these arguments are moving towards this. The Apostle Paul, because they talk really only about Paul. The Apostle Paul meant lustful relationships between men or relationships where there's a power differential, grown man and a boy. That's what Paul meant. He didn't mean a loving relationship. There's nowhere in the Bible you can turn to, Old Testament or New, where same-sex unions, loving, are used as a model, spoken of approvingly, documented. There are cases in the Bible where facts that you could consider embarrassing to the lineage of Jesus are discussed. True, women who at one time were prostitutes in his lineage. King David was a serial adulterer and murderously so. Solomon may not even be saved. So these things, the Bible doesn't shy away from this stuff. And in each of those cases, you see the costs, particularly that David paid. David's decision with Bathsheba, I think, destroyed his family and his kingship. And because he was a man after God's heart, God rescued and God forgave. And David sought that and he wept over it and he confessed and he repented, truly, fully, emotionally repented. So these arguments are always moving towards that. Well, Paul just meant lustful or power differential, but that's not what Paul said. And it's not what Jesus modeled. And therefore, a man leaves his family and clings to his wife and they become one flesh. And Jesus, with the prohibition against glibly leaving your wife, you've heard it said that if you leave your wife, you must give her a certificate of divorce. I tell you, unless it's in a case of adultery or sexual perversion, you're not to leave your wife. Jesus talked about love your wife as Christ loved the church, not your partner, not your same-sex partner, your wife as Christ loved the church. Women, serve your husband as if you're serving Christ himself. So long as your husband is serving Christ, is abiding with Jesus Christ. And then the great, beautiful phrase of coming under and lifting up. Man and woman. There simply is not a model in the Bible for same-sex activity or same-sex marriage, loving or not, being affirmed. So I'm continuing to challenge myself. And in this discussion, we've talked about heretical pastors and people who take this view that the Bible has parts that are true and not true and some things that need to be softened, often will come and say, who are you to judge? Who are you to judge to say this pastor is heretical? Did God make you judge? And my response is, I can't judge God's justice or how God views a person. But I am able to discern by the fruits, know them by the fruits, and then that way may have some discernment. I want to play two pieces of audio for you and see if we can discern together who might be the worst false teacher here or the biggest heretic? So the first case, I want to just describe this. This is a man dressed like a bee, delivering a sermon in the form of a poem about Palestine.
Jesus was from Palestine. He was Palestinian. His skin was brown, he wasn't blonde, and he hated capitalism. Jesus was from Palestine, and please let it be known that he was Palestinian from birth till he was grown. And when he died upon the cross, look to him from the pew. He screamed to all humanity, "You know not what you do." Jesus was from Palestine. His one and only order was to love each other regardless of race, creed, or border.
Okay, let's begin at the beginning. The evidence that Jesus hated capitalism is that he recruited fishermen who sold fish, that the disciples continued to earn a living. Luke was a physician. Paul was a tent maker, selling their services. Jesus was Palestinian? The book of Matthew begins with the lineage of Jesus. Jesus Christ was born Jewish on both sides of his family. This is unquestionable. Jesus had only one command: love one another regardless of race, creed, or border. One? Jesus had a whole series of commands. And in regard to border and race, yes. But how did Jesus love? It began with something else, a command. Love the Lord your God with your entire heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And how did Jesus model love? By sometimes saying no. When two of the disciples wanted to strike people down with lightning bolts from heaven because they had spat upon and attempted to belittle Jesus, he said, "No, no, we're not going to do that." That was a command, no. Jesus had another command, and that was a guy dressed in a bee suit with bad poetry, okay? So heretical, yeah. But is he a worse heretic than this so-called pastor? This Lutheran pastor of Elka is on video openly rejecting the Great Commission.
Now, I think we still need to do it carefully. I think we still need to do it respecting other people's cultures. I think we still need to do it without dominance and force. I think we still need to do it respecting consent if there are people who do not want us to tell them. I think that there are people who are perfectly happy in other faiths who do not need converted to ours. I think there are people who are perfectly happy with no faith at all, and I don't think we're doing them any favors if they have no, if they don't believe in God. I don't think we're doing them any favors by jumping on top of them and telling them they're wrong.
Okay, let's think about her and the so-called pastor, and then let's examine the words of Jesus Christ. Tell me if this is a faithful rendering here of Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20. You tell me if this is a faithful reading. Got it? Here we go. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, if it works for you, and people are not offended, or they're not in a faith with which they're happy, or they're thriving in their other faith, give some thought to going and making disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, or the Holy Spirit, unless they're happily following Allah or a pagan god or another false god. And teach them to obey some of the things I've asked you to consider doing. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age." Is that a faithful reading? Of course it's not. Jesus Christ said in Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. That is a command. It's not an if you feel like it. It's not with the additional waiver of unless people are happy in their existing faith. And what the heretical pastor said there was that there are people who don't need to hear this because they're happy in their existing faith. This then, of course, attempts to void something Jesus said about himself. I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father but through me. My continuing worry and sort of fascination at the same time as I worry as I'm going through these conversations, challenging myself to read the most challenging works, saying that Christians should affirm same-sex unions and relationships, is the glee with which people seem to take that one special sin and forget that when you start saying that the Bible, that Jesus didn't really mean things, what you're saying is that Jesus didn't really mean anything. I've also noticed this. I've never had someone from the sexual left come to me and say, well, Jesus didn't really mean love thy neighbor as thyself. After all, they didn't have condos. They didn't know that some neighbors are really, really loud. We'll come back on A Disciple's View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. The change of president has been a change of culture. That has not really happened in Washington, D.C. Changing of some, non-controversial policy positions to a degree. President Trump was the biggest change agent as a president we've seen. But a changing of culture, that's a pretty big deal in a town of like Washington, D.C., where culture is thick. If you've not lived there, even for a brief time, I lived there just a little under 2 years. The culture norms there are so much different. For instance, dinner hour begins in Washington, D.C. for the elite class at about 8 o'clock. Now, maybe that's like where you live, not where I live. We're 6 o'clock people now. My wife and I, we're kind of 4 o'clock people. The income affects things. That there's no recessions and no depressions in Washington, D.C. So people in governments get paid 2 to 3 times what the average American gets paid. And that also begets a culture. A lot of people have second and third houses. It is not uncommon to have to guess when you see a man in his 60s walk into a room with a young woman. Is that his daughter, his girlfriend, his assistant, or his assistant girlfriend or wife? The cultures are different. When I lived there, there's a ton of drinking and people cussed a lot. F words, very common there. So it's a different culture. Since you're listening to AFR, probably deeply different from where you live. So the change in culture has manifested itself in big policies, but also on things that you would think of as kind of smaller policies. Here's Pete Hegseth's stance on ships named after activists.
You chose Pride Month to direct the Navy to rename a ship named for Navy veteran Harvey Milk. This committee will continue to pursue serious work in the interests of American national security, and I ask you to choose to join us in that endeavor.
Senator, we're not interested in naming ships after activists. That's the stance we're taking.
And it's a proper stance. If we're going to name ships after people, shouldn't it be people who have robust and real heroic acts in the military? Now, incidentally, I'm not so certain we should name ships after anybody, particularly presidents or secretaries of state. I think those seem like idols to me. Maybe the ships should be named after states. I guess we'd have too many ships for that. But I just tend to look at things and say, look, are we making idols of humans? And certainly there's people we should honor who had truly heroic careers in the military, and maybe that's proper, but not activists. And not just for political reasons or social, or in this case, obvious reasons, that Harvey Milk was a very, very controversial man who happened to be same-sex attracted, and it's always sad when people are murdered. But his background's one that if you've not read about, you should, because there's a ton of controversy. Now, I said change of culture. I don't think I ever thought I'd hear this. But this is an ex-Biden Pentagon press secretary admitting on CNN the professionalism of the military led by the Trump administration.
It was an incredibly complex operation. I mean, you cannot deny the professionalism of our military when it came to this operation.
Her name is Juliet Kam. And it's a quick little soundbite. It's refreshing, I guess, to hear that you can't deny it because you can't. And it stands in such utter stark comparison to the $7.2 billion in equipment and capabilities that the figurehead Biden was caused to leave behind in Afghanistan, capabilities to identify our troops through facial recognition, some of their personal data to find and then to eliminate Afghan citizens who helped us in that war effort. It's just such a stark contrast, and it goes to a culture change. No one at the Department of Defense ever paid a price for that. And General Milley has yet to answer for his offer to commit treason to the Chinese Communist Party. I don't think we'll see those activities within the Trump administration's military, something tells me. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
And there's a lot of other, for example, the idea that we're, in terms of taxes, that they refuse to... For example, I was able to balance the budget and pass everything from the global warming bill anyway.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in today's Tower Babbling. That's almost always the case. California Congresswoman Sidney Kamlager Dove told on herself by saying her constituents are being arrested by ICE.
I came here today to find my constituents. I have a constituent who is deaf and mute. He was picked up by ICE and transported, and we are still looking for him. We had a list of constituents that we are trying to check on. We were conducting oversight, and we were also conducting casework.
So if he is an illegal immigrant, how then is he a constituent? And are we to believe that multiple U.S. citizens have been picked up and hidden by ICE? If that's the case, if actual U.S. citizens are being rounded up and taken in by ICE, and I know there's been mistakes. God awful. I cannot imagine how frustrated and angry I'd be. If there is these cases, she's got three cases of U.S. citizens being picked up and taken by ICE, please get in touch with me. I, with permission of AFR management, I would do everything possible to hold the ICE officers and ICE as an institution to account. Somehow I think we're not going to get that phone call. Second soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. J.D. Vance was a little disappointed that Alex Padilla wasn't at his press conference.
Well, I was hoping Jose Padilla would be here to ask a question, but unfortunately, I guess he decided not to show up because there wasn't the theater. And that's all it is. You know, I think everybody realizes that's what this is. It's pure political theater. These guys show up, They want to be captured on camera doing something. They want to be able to go back to their far left groups and to say, look, me, I stood up against border enforcement. I stood up against Donald Trump. But all they're really standing up for is for drug cartels to run rampant over our country and sex traffickers to be able to continue to traffic little kids into our country.
Now, I hope that J.D. Vance didn't say Jose Padilla on purpose. The man's name is apparently Alex. I hope it was a slip of the tongue. But it gave Alex Padilla an opportunity to go on TV and weep again. And yeah, theater. Alex Padilla could have had a conversation with Kristi Noem through official channels, through email, through written letter, through senatorial hearings. Obviously, bum-rushing her podium was simply for the purpose of what J.D. Vance said it was, theater. So-called Congressman Jerry Nadler accused ICE agents of hiding something by covering their faces, but it conveniently ignored the thousands of mass rioters in L.A. before that, and Seattle.
But these people are wearing masks and are totally unidentified. And the question is why? The question is why? It's completely improper. And again, one has to assume they're hiding something or they're hiding misbehavior, because otherwise, why would they be wearing masks and denying their identities?
Yeah, because they would be targeted for murder by cartels and their families. Their families would be targeted to be tortured and murdered by cartel members. That's why, just so you know. Oh, he knows that. He knows that when I go to Mexico, there's very commonly, there's like seven police forces. We're in the Puerto Vallarta area when we go there. And there's seven police forces that patrol. There are two police forces that are masked. And I've asked my friends who are Mexican nationals, why are they masked? He goes, oh, they're the ones who deal with the cartels. One of them on the water, one on land. They're masked and anonymous because the cartels will target their families. That's why, Jerry. That's why. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
Well, I'm sick and tired of smart guys.
On a Disciple's View.
On a personal note today, what do you say about someone who's never supposed to have had the success they've had? What do you say about that? One of the things I say is that people never see the little things. For instance, I have a friend of mine who is now in the business of checking his bank account. That's his job. He wakes up in the morning, and on Fridays, Johnny goes and checks the bank account. I mean, his real name is John, and we call him Johnny. He's in his 70s. I guess you can still be Johnny in your 70s. And we joke with him about what hard work that is. Hey, Johnny, you okay? I know it's a bank account checking day. And so what Johnny does is he collects checks for land people lease from him. Here's what people don't see. They don't see the first lot that Johnny and his wife bought some 45 years ago, where they had to hand build the structure that was there. And that was the structure that sustained their family for a number of years. And it had, let's see, it had a liquor store in it. And when he came to Christ, he couldn't have the liquor store anymore. They switched that out. And at one point, it was a tiny little, not really convenience store. We didn't have those then. But it was a little tiny grocery store. Eventually, it became a deli. And then they scraped together some money and they bought another lot and another, and they began to expand out, but always doing the work on their own. They didn't hire their first employee, I think Johnny told us, for 15 years. He's in his 70s. And yeah, Johnny checks the bank account on Friday. That's his full-time job now. And that bank account tithes. It puts young men to work. Sometimes young men who have their first jobs in their mid-20s because of bad decisions they've made, they don't see those details. Johnny's not supposed to be where he's at. He's a junior high dropout. He's not supposed to get phone calls from state senators. Hey, Johnny, love to come and meet you. I bet you would. What do you say about that? Here's what he says. There but the grace of God. He bought that lot, scraped together the money, because he was having trouble getting hired. So he built his own job. That's what he and his wife did. There but the grace of God. What do you say about people who aren't supposed to be where they're at? I think of my wife, a brilliant teacher, someone uniquely gifted, not just to teach kids to read, but to impart in them a joy of reading. She herself dropped out of school. She had to. Self-preservation, survival. What do you say about that? One day, maybe my wife will tell you the full story, but I will tell you this. There was a time when she was sledding in Utah, zooming down a hill, headed to a chain link fence, about to smash into it, and then came out the other side of it, whole. The tracks from the sled went right through the fence. She wasn't harmed. She wasn't touched by the fence. There but the grace of God. And when she became an honors list, dean's list graduate, that wasn't supposed to happen, but God had a plan. People don't see these things. They see the outcome. Wow, your wife's a gifted teacher. Right, but she wasn't supposed to be. I'm supposed to be in prison. In sixth grade, my principal announced to my best friend's mother, do not let your son spend time around Todd Herman because Todd Herman's going to spend his life in prison. I was not supposed to be here, but there but the grace of God. Yeah, I was a smart aleck, sometimes worse. And God was equipping me for something. I didn't know it. I didn't understand it. The ability to speak and not be afraid of it. Yeah, it landed me in a ton of trouble. And by the way, in the past couple years, it has again. Because sometimes my need to speak extemporaneously gets the best of me. And not a week goes by that I don't thank God for giving me the opportunity to speak His word wrapped around news as we get to do here. Thank you, Lord. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations, until God grants us the permission to speak again together. May His peace, which transcends all understanding, rest upon you and your beloved families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.